Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 60, Text 45. Krishna teases Rukmini. Tvaktva samasu ramanam ka kesha pindamantar. Mam shasti rakta krimvit kalpa pita vatam.
Mam shasti rakta.
Jivach chavam bhajati kanta mati vimudha.
Jivach chavam bhajati kanta mati vimudha.
Yate padaja makarandam ajit rita rati stri.
Yate padaja makarandam.
Tvakshmar shru roma naka kesha pindamantar.
Tvakshmar shru roma naka kesha pindamantar.
Mam shasti rakta krim vrit kalpa pitavatam.
Mam shasti rakta
Jivach chavam bhajati kanta mati vimudha.
Jivach chavam bhajati kanta mati vimudha.
Yete padabhya makarandam ajit harti shri.
Yete padabhya makarandam ajit
Pinandham anta. Pinandham anta. Is there a word missing?
Anta.
Anta is not there. I'm not making that one. Okay, have a go.
Anta.
I'll fill in the anta at the end. Okay.
Okay.
Mamsasti rakta krimi vit kalpa pita vatam.
Mamsasti rakta krimi with skin. Shmar shru. Whiskers. Roma. Bodily hair. Naka. Nails. Kesha. And hair on the head. Pinadham. Covered. Anta. Inside. Mamsha. Flesh. Ashti. Bones. Rakta. Blood. Krimi. Worms. Vit.
Stool.
Kapha. Mucus. Pitta. Bile. Vatam. Air. Jivat. Living. Shavam. A corpse. Bhajati. Worships. Kanta.
As a husband or a lover.
Mati. Whose idea? Vimudha. Totally bewildered. Ya. Who? Te. Your. Pada Abja. Of the lotus feet. Makarandam. The honey. Ajigrahrati. Not smelling. Sri. Woman. Any guesses what this verse is going to be about? Okay, it doesn't take rocket science. Okay, here we go. A woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet becomes totally befooled, and thus she accepts her husband or lover. a living corpse covered with skin, whiskers, nails, head hair and body hair, and filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, feces, mucus, bile and air. You want to repeat that? We'll just go straight to the purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Here, Krishna's chaste wife makes quite an unequivocal statement about the material sense gratification based on the physical body. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments as follows on this verse. On the authority of the statement, Savai Pati Svad Akutu Bhajam Svayam, he indeed should become one's husband who can remove all fear. Sri Krishna is the real husband of all women at all time. Thus a woman who worships someone else as her husband simply worships a dead body. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments further, Rukmini thus considered that although the sweetness of Lord Krishna's lotus feet is well known, and although he possesses an eternal body full of knowledge and bliss, foolish women reject him. An ordinary husband's body is covered on the outside by skin and hair, otherwise being filled with blood and feces and flesh and bile and so on. It would be overwhelmed with flies and other vermin attracted by its bad smell and other offensive qualities. Those who have no particular experience of beauty and purity of Krishna or of Krishna consciousness may be confused by such uncompromising denunciations of the material bodily gratification. But those who are enlightened in Krishna consciousness will be enlivened and enthused by such absolute truthful statements. Translation again, a woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet becomes totally befooled, and thus she accepts her husband or lover as a living corpse covered with skin, whiskers, nails, head hair, body hair, filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, feces, mucus, bile and air. Omagana Timiranda Shyaganjana Shalakya Chakshu Militam Yunan Tasmai Sri Guruvaya Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Bastai Buddhalay Shimadi Ridai Nanda Goswami Niti Namine. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Bastai Buddhalay Shimadi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharane Nevisesi Shunyavani Pashachade Shatarane. Shri Krishna Jaitana Prabhu Nichananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, it's absolutely true, isn't it? Women, this is the Shastra here. Women's bodies don't have bodily hairs. You have to understand that from the Shastra here. That actually, women's bodies don't have bodily hairs. They don't smell. They don't have bile, mucus, or anything, which is absolutely. It's only the men that stink. We've been told that many times, correct? Actually, it's not completely true. Being in the material body is an embarrassing situation because all of us have got these qualities that makes up this material body. Now, I mean, this is not the kind of verse that, as it's mentioned here in the purport, those who have no practical experience of the beauty and purity of Krishna consciousness or Krishna may be confused by such uncompromising denunciations of the material body and bodily gratification. So this is not the kind of verse that you would tell somebody straight off, not usually, when they first come to Krishna consciousness. Actually, you know, your body is made up of this, 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 and this, and this. And we can understand from a Krishna conscious point of view that actually this is an intelligent understanding that, yeah, actually, this is no buts about it. This is what the body is made up of. When we analyze it, really, this is really what the body is. Nothing more than that. But we as devotees know that we're not these material bodies. We know that we're spirit soul and we're just residing within this body for a period of time. But to the materialist, the body is the all in all. And even though a body may start to decay, generally the materialist feels that somehow or other I can maintain the beauty of this body, somehow or another, whether I spend $100,000 on plastic surgery or cosmetic surgery or implants or outplants or whatever, if I can just maintain this bodily appearance, everything will be okay. But it's futile. And at the end, your body is just a bag of stool. Like You see so many older people, and really, from even a material point of view, they've lost their attractiveness. There's nothing that you can do about that. The body is saggy and baggy. It was actually really interesting. We did this play some time ago about Hansel and Gretel. And it was called, Hansel and Gretel. And it was how Hansel and Gretel came to this material world. Has anybody seen that play?
Yeah.
Yeah? Came to this material world, and after a period of time, they grew older and older. And we used all the songs from The Sound of Music and changed the lyrics a little bit. And one of the lyrics was, that one, I am 16 going on. So we had, I am 60 going on 70. And what was it again, Bhakti? How did it go? This is the fag end of life, saggy and baggy, wrinkled and fat. What is the point of that? So anyway, it made it quite clear that when we get older, we're saggy and baggy, wrinkled and fat. But it's not really that, and physically, a person is no longer attractive. You don't see Playboy advertising centrefolds with 90-year-old women or 80-year-old women or Cosmo. Do they still have a Cleo magazine with saggy old men? It's amazing how on the bodily platform we are so attracted. There was recently an article that I read about a presidential campaign that happened in America in the 60s with Richard Nixon and President Kennedy, John F. Kennedy. Now, there was a debate on TV. This is one of the first debates that a political debate on TV. TV had just come in, and it was John Kennedy and Richard Nixon. Now, you were familiar with those two personalities? So there was a debate. And in every way, shape and form, Richard Nixon won that debate. If you actually listen to the debate on radio, without seeing the footage, without seeing the characters on the screen, you would say, oh God, that JFK just didn't know what he was talking about. It was just such a lay-down misere that the debate was won by Richard Nixon. But because it was on TV, and because John F. Kennedy was a really handsome man, from all accounts, he won the debate. And he eventually won the presidency. So it's all based on bodily conception. People judge things by how good a person looks. Just like at the moment, we're in the grip of having an election this year. It's a lay-down misere that the handsomest person is going to win that election. Because generally, people are attracted to a handsome personality. These are things that people are automatically attracted to. And we try to cover up our material aging process in so many different ways, but ultimately there's nothing we can do about it. But a devotee also sees the beauty. Not only do we see, okay, the grossness of our material body, that, yeah, it's all these things, but a devotee with intelligence actually sees, yeah, we have this bodily situation and it's all blood pus, but how does the blood work? How does the bile work? How does the mucus work? How does the feces work? How does so many things are just so incredibly organized within this bodily vehicle? And who is the creator of that bodily vehicle? And that's Krishna. That's God. Somebody has designed this most incredible vehicle. So a devotee sees it on many levels, whereas the materialist just sees it on that one level of physical attraction. So that's called covering. Material energy covers the living entity from the start to be attracted to this physical body. And throughout history we've seen so many times that the heart of a woman or the attractiveness of a woman has led great heroes into wars and battles, and they've fought for their loved one, and so on and so forth. Even in our Vedic understanding, we used to have that play, Liquid Beauty. Remember that play, Liquid Beauty? Rupa Raghunath Pandey was we dressed him up as the princess, and I was the suitor. It's a play about a suitor who is fascinated by this princess, and he's fascinated by her beauty. But the princess is actually a devotee, and she understands that she's nothing but this bag of stool and pus and all that kind of thing. And so she said, and he said, "Oh, but I love you so much." And he said, "Yeah, but do you love my body or do you really love me?" "No, I love you, you know." "Well, do you know what my body is made up of?" "No, you're just so beautiful." She said, "Well, listen, go away for a week and think about your love for me. And for a week I will fast." "Oh no, come back in a week and I will show you what this beauty is made from." And he said, "Yes, yes, yes, yes." So in a week I come back, and Rupa Raghunath Pade, during that period of time, this lady has gone through all these fasts and purges and all this kind of stuff and purged the body and cleansed all the body and everything. She's vomited up different things and enemas and the whole thing, and she's got a bucket of this stuff, right? That made her, and she looks completely drawn and haggard and wiped out. And the suitor comes back, you know, he rides in sort of thing, you know, "Where is my loved one? I've come to find out what makes her so beautiful," you know, and Rupa Raghunath Pade is sitting in the corner, you know, "Have you seen my darling princess?" You know, "I am that princess." "What? No, you're not. You're an ugly old bag. Where is my princess?" You know, and she was going to show me what her beauty was made of, you know. And so then she said, "I am your princess, and here's my bucket. This is what I'm made of." So this is a very subtle preaching. So, but the message got across, and the Sunday Feast crowd liked it very much. So there are other stories as well. In our Shastras, we have the story of Bilvamangala Thakur, who was chasing after the prostitute Chintamani, and he would go to great lengths. He was infatuated with this lady. He'd just do anything. He'd swim over rivers and torrents and lightning and all this kind of stuff, scale high walls to get to his loved one. And again, Chintamani was a very Krishna conscious sort of person. She said, "You know, it's really a waste of endeavor that you're doing all this. You know, for me, I'm just a human. I'm just this bag. If you would make the same effort to actually search after Krishna, who is full of happiness, full of real attractiveness, like it's described here, that the sweetness of Krishna's lotus feet is well known. And although he possesses the eternal body full of knowledge and bliss, foolish women reject him." So Krishna's lotus feet are flowing with honey. The nectar of Krishna is just so attractive. If you just put that endeavor towards searching for Krishna, then actually you'll have real happiness. So this material world is nothing but ignorance and selfishness. We're here for a reason. Ignorantly and selfishly, we try to enjoy and try to seek out some sort of happiness. And unfortunately, in that process, we start to think that we're these material bodies. And this happens from a very early age, right from the start. It's not that we have our conditioning and our desire, but also our immediate family and friends, they spur on this belief that you're the body as well. In that same play that we did, Hansel and Gretel, that at the start of it we had, I was dressed up as a baby in a little cot, and that's how it opened up, and I was this baby with a big dummy, and everybody was around me, you know, and saying, "Oh, isn't he cute? He's such a cute little baby." We all do it. A new baby comes into the world, "Oh, he's so gorgeous, look at his chubby little cheeks," and all this kind of thing, you know. So straight away the kid thinks, "Hey, this is pretty cool, you know, they really think I'm something, you know, this body is something." So right from the start, we condition and we maintain that condition. So we keep thinking we're these bodies. But we know from Bhagavad Gita, "Dehino saminya tadehe kaumanam jogalam jara tatadeham taraprabtir diras tataram uyanti." These bodies are constantly changing from boyhood to youth to old age, and eventually another body and another one and another one. And Prabhupada says that that quality of dhiras tatra namuyata, dhiras means one who is not intoxicated, one who is sober. So this material illusion, thinking that we're these material bodies, is an actual intoxication, is a covering. If we really see things as they are, we will become fed up with this material body and want something more. Just recently I was reading something out of Bhagavad Gita, and I just want to read the purport that Prabhupada said to that section. It's in the later chapters. If you don't mind, I'll just read that out. It's in Nature, the Enjoyer and Consciousness. I'll just do the translation. "Nature is said to be the cause of all material activities and effects. whereas the living entity is the cause of various sufferings and enjoyment in this world. The different manifestations of body and senses among living entities are due to material nature. There are 8,400,000 species of life, and these varieties are creations of material nature. They arise from different sensual pleasures of the living entity, who thus desires to live in that body or in this body or that. When he is put in different bodies, he enjoys different kinds of happiness and distress. So we're constantly searching for happiness, but there's also distress. His material happiness and distress are due to his body, and not to himself as he is, so the person within. In his original state, there is no doubt of enjoyment. Therefore, there is real, that is his real state. So inwardly, we are totally at peace and happy. But because we're manifesting ourselves through these bodies, we're in anxiety and some happiness and some distress. Because the desire to lord it over material nature, he is in this material world. In the spiritual world, there is no such thing. The spiritual world is pure, but in the material world, everyone is struggling hard to acquire victims who present different pleasures to the body. It might be more clear to state that this body is the effect of the senses. The senses are instruments for gratifying desire. Now the sum total, body and instrument senses, are offered by material nature, and as will be clear in the next verse, the living entity is blessed or damned with circumstances according to his past desires and activities. So as we desire, we go forward to another body seeking happiness. The being himself is the cause of attaining such residential quarters as his attendant enjoyment or suffering. Once placed in some particular kind of body, he comes under the control of nature because the body, being matter, acts according to the laws of nature. At that time, the living entity has no power to change that law. Suppose an entity is put in the body of a dog. As soon as he's put into the body of the dog, he must act like a dog. So this is the stringent laws of nature. He cannot act otherwise. And if the living entity is put in the body of a hog, then he is forced to eat stool and act like a hog. Similarly, if the living entity is put in the body of a demigod, he must act according to this body. This is the law of nature. But in all circumstances, the supersoul is with the individual soul. That is explained in the Vedas as follows: Dva Supanam Sajuya Sakyai. The Supreme Lord is so kind upon the living entity that he always accompanies the individual soul and in all circumstances is present as the supersoul or Paramatma. So Krishna is so merciful that even we are completely covered by this intoxication of being engrossed in this material body. He accompanies the living entity through every body that we go through. And he wants us to be again attracted to him. He wants us to come to him. So this is the struggle that we go through lifetime after lifetime. How can we find ultimate happiness? And we know that ultimate happiness comes from being with Krishna. Now it's not only females, as is mentioned here, that are searching for the honey of the lotus feet of Krishna. A couple of verses back in text 36, it's mentioning how the sages, and that can be male sages as well, that were searching for the nectar of Krishna's lotus feet. So we're all searching for this honey, the nectar of Krishna's lotus feet. And as is pointed out here in this chapter, that a woman who worships someone else as her husband simply worships a dead body. So this brings up that point of marriage. Within marriage, remember some time ago I gave a class on marriage, and that if we base a Krishna conscious marriage just on a bodily attraction between a male and female, then it actually is due to suffer. But the perfect marriage is actually a threesome, where Krishna is the center of a marriage. And both the husband and the wife love Krishna and strive for Krishna's attraction and Krishna's affection and Krishna's love equally. And then with that equal love, we actually develop a good Krishna conscious relationship. So this is the way that we should develop our Krishna consciousness. Whether it's in a married situation or as an individual, we develop and relish different ways of attracting Krishna. So Material happiness actually can be compared to like an immature child. When a person is deeply ignorant and is totally engrossed in bodily sense gratification and bodily attraction, it's compared to an immature child. An immature child has some specific toys that it plays with. Now, for an adult, those toys are, you know, just not appealing at all. Like recently we went to a celebration of the birth of another Vaishnav devotee baby, and I bought this little cow rattle thing, you know, which is attractive. But for us, I wouldn't sit there for an hour playing with a rattle or something, but the young child might. So we grow out of our play toys, and we grow into other things. So same is with this material attachment. We're searching over and over again what's going to make me happy, lifetime after lifetime. Perhaps if I do that, maybe I'll be happy. But the intelligence says, no, that won't bring about happiness. Maybe if I try that, then I'll be happy. No, that won't bring happiness. And so on and so forth. Neti, neti. Not this, not this, not this, not this. So we keep experimenting with the material nature as to what's going to make us happy. Krishna wants us to be happy, and he gives full facility for us to be happy in different ways. But we want permanent happiness. It's innate desire within us that actually we want to be happy all the time. So eventually what happens is we get the opportunity to be with Krishna, or eventually we get the idea by the mercy of the devotees that actually real happiness comes on a spiritual transcendental level, and that actually if we're trying to achieve happiness materially through these physical bodies, we're meant to be in a disastrous situation. And as soon as we start thinking, okay, now what is the spiritual direction that I should take, and understanding that actually we are not these material bodies and that we're spirit soul, then Krishna starts acting from within. But and eventually we come to a spiritual life, and then we grow out of this stage of just being attracted to material toys, the physical things, the material bodies. A classic example in our history, in Vedic history, is that of Jamuna Acharya. When he became Krishna conscious and he was asked if he was still attracted to sexual attraction, he said, when I think of actually that gross material act of selfish, indulgent sex act, I curl my lip and spit, because it's devoid of any sort of Krishna consciousness. It's devoid of that transcendental relationship with Krishna. So that is an example of how by growing he was able to understand what this material situation is like. So this growth is a growth of consciousness. Our consciousness, because the soul is a conscious, conscious thing, and a conscious thing grows. And it's sometimes disputed whether this growth happens because of Krishna's mercy, or does it happen because we actually work on this growth. So some people say that, you know, all you need to develop your spirituality, all you need to be liberated from this cage, this material cage, is to get mercy, mercy of the Lord. They actually don't have to do anything, it's just the mercy of the Lord. The Lord will benedict you and you'll realize your real position and you'll be no longer attached to this material body. A lot of the Mayavadi schools teach this philosophy that if the Guru just gives you blessing or darshan or shaktipath, then all of a sudden you will be realized and you wouldn't have had to have done anything. Similarly, you have the situation where in the Christian theology you have that slogan that you see sometimes on the back of cars, I'm not perfect but Jesus saves me, you know. That doesn't work that way. You know, it's from our scriptures and from our shastras we understand that actually if we want to grow our Krishna consciousness, if we want to grow our attraction to Krishna, we actually have to work at it. We have to work at it. It's not something that's just going to be... There's mercy of the Lord, obviously, but basically speaking, we have to grow. A classic example that Chiranjeev Prabhu gave some time back was that of a parent. When a parent sees a child growing, and we as parents know that it's the most monumentous time when a child starts walking. When the child starts to walk, the parent is really enthusiastic because it knows it's growing, it's making progress. And it's not going to just all of a sudden stand up and walk. There's going to be fall downs. You have the child at one end of the room and you go, come on, come on. And it slowly, slowly, pop, falls down again. And then again, and again. So that is the nature of a parent. But the parent can't do everything for the child. It would be wrong to do everything for the child in its growth. How can we possibly do that? You know, if you take care of everything, the child wants something without the child making endeavour, then the child will be spoiled and it wouldn't be able to grow properly. Recently we heard an analogy that was given about a gentleman that came across a cocoon with a butterfly in it. Have you heard this analogy before? There's a cocoon with a butterfly in it, and you know how the caterpillar goes in the cocoon, spins the cocoon, and then after a period of growth, the butterfly eats its way out of the cocoon and flies away. Well, this man came across this cocoon, and we've all done it as children, obviously, too, sometimes, I'm sure, and has seen how this butterfly is within the cocoon and is trying to get out. So he thought he'd be the good Samaritan and sort of help out this butterfly and open it up with a little knife. You know, here we go, little butterfly, I'll open it up for you. What the result of that was is that butterfly was prematurely released from its cocoon. It didn't have to struggle, and consequently its wings were weak, its bodily structure was weak, and it fell prey to all sorts of predators that were wanting to eat it. It wasn't strong. Why wasn't it strong? Because it didn't get the opportunity to actually develop its muscles by breaking out of its cocoon. So we're in a similar situation. If we don't struggle in our process for growth, coming closer and closer to Krishna, then our growth will be stunted. So we have to actually work on our growth. It's not that we just accept things and it's Guru's mercy and it's Krishna's mercy. We actually have to develop and work on our Krishna consciousness. We have to work on our growth. There are even in the Vedic scriptures, there are schools that teach it's all the mercy of Krishna. And they give the analogy of a cat. Krishna's like a cat, and when a cat has kittens, the cat picks up the kitten by the head and just leads it from one place to the other and carries it around like that. So that analogy is like we're all just at the mercy of Krishna. Whatever happens to us is Krishna's mercy. The cat just drags around the little kitten. That's one philosophy. But then similarly, there's another philosophy that Krishna is the monkey and we're the baby monkey. What does the baby monkey have to do? The baby monkey has to hang on to the mother. The mother doesn't carry it, it has to hang on. Now, from our tradition and the Vedic teachings, that is actually our position. We have to work at hanging on to Krishna. In Christian theology, Saint Augustine, who is one of the probably the founders of modern-day Christianity, his thought was also that the only mercy is that if God saves you, he gives you a blessing to be saved. This was his. There is no other way. So thereby, this philosophy of, if you don't take Jesus in your heart, you're lost, is where that came from. Now, this Saint Augustine was the first person also that advocated killing all heretics. Anybody that didn't believe in Jesus, we kill him. This is Saint Augustine, who is one of the founding fathers of Christianity. He also refuted other things like, women's role in Christianity, downgrading women to the status of practically not having a soul. And the other one was that actually it's only by God's mercy that you can be delivered, that you can be saved. Jesus saves, and if you don't happen to have Jesus' mercy, well then it's bad luck, you're sent to hell. This was the philosophy. And basically, although it's been adjusted and rearranged, that's still the philosophy. That Martin Luther was also in the same light. And to this day, if you talk to an evangelical Christian, they will say that, you know. Jesus will save you, but if you don't take Jesus into your life, you're actually lost. What a ludicrous situation. What an absolutely ludicrous situation. As if God would do that to his beloved. As is pointed out in that verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna so loves the living entities that he accompanies every living entity, waiting for that living entity to turn to him and be attracted to him and serve him. So Krishna makes the effort. There's no doubt that there's Krishna's mercy. But the more that the devotee actually makes the effort to come to Krishna, the more help Krishna gives the devotee. But the effort has to be there. And the result of it is that when we make an effort to grow in our Krishna consciousness, happiness increases. Our happiness, our spiritual happiness. And that spiritual happiness has no limits. As again, it was pointed out in that Bhagavad Gita verse, in that purport, Prabhupada explains that our inherent nature is to want to love and serve Krishna eternally in the spiritual world. So there are no limits to spiritual happiness. Absolutely no limits. It continues to grow and grow and grow. Even when we come to the spiritual world, that happiness doesn't cease. We continue to grow in spiritual happiness unlimitedly. And that unlimited happiness actually satisfies our best intelligence. As you remember before when we were talking about the material, trying to find happiness within the material world, our intelligence is always saying, no, that didn't make us happy, okay, oh no, that person didn't make us happy, or if I did this, that was the bad side of that, and weighing up, not this, maybe if I do that, then your intelligence says, yeah, but if you do that, then you have to compromise this situation. But with spiritual happiness, unlimited, unbounded spiritual happiness, your intelligence, your best intelligence, is emphasizing to you that no matter which way you take it, Krishna's mercy, Krishna's happiness in spiritual life, as it said here, those who participate or those who experience the beauty and purity of Krishna, number one, that you actually experience the beauty of Krishna and purity of Krishna, or of the Krishna consciousness, also to be in that association of Krishna consciousness, like-minded devotees, the happiness is totally satisfying to our intelligence because there's no ifs or buts. It's just full, continuous, growing, unlimited happiness. So, and that's, again, but the material energy is so strong that it binds us here and we have to break out of it. We have to break out of that cocoon. We had that example of Indra. You know how Indra was, by some curse, was cursed to be a pig. Now, I mean, if we can imagine what luxury and what position Lord Indra has in the heavenly planets, I mean, his opulence is just overwhelming. But somehow or other, he was cursed to be a pig. And in that pig body, he found happiness. And even though they sent messages to him, a messenger, to say, hey, listen, you're actually Lord Indra, you have to come back to the heavenly planet, you know, your planet, is, you know, your abode with all its wealth and everything. He said, no, I want to stay here with my pig mm-hmm. wife and pig kids, and I love the stool and my little... So this is the nature of the material attachment. Material attachment is, again, we heard this really nice analogy. Material attachment is like those of you that have done any sort of artwork or craft work, you know, like when you get glue on your hands, right, and you haven't washed it off and it's sort of really like that, and you're walking around and anything you touch, fur or hair, it all sticks to your hands, correct? Well, material attraction, material attachment, the senses and the mind are actually sticky. They're like that. They're sticky. And everything that comes to us is attracting to us. We stick to, oh, yeah, oh, I like that. Yes, I'll have that. Oh, I like that. I'll have that. So it's sticky. And so we're attracted to anything, even these ugly bodies. You know, we can't give up these ugly bodies. No, you know, I'm not, you know, like when you get older, like when you're young, you sort of look in the mirror and think, yeah, that's not bad, it's pretty good. Then as you get older, you look in the same mirror and you go, well, no, but I'm still pretty good, you know, like that. So you just delude yourself, you're attracted, that stickiness of attraction is still there. And so similarly, people have these conceptions about their car. My car is the best car, you know. It's just such, and it's an old bomb. It's just a hunk of steel and metal. And oh no, it's such a good car. It's got such a good engine, you know. And similarly, we have, you know, like the situation, our attachment to our house. So you've got the attachment to your body, which we know is an ugly old mess, and eventually will rot and stinks. And then you have your other extended yous, your car and your house. You know, oh yeah, that's mine. That's my car. You know, or that's my house. I've bought this house. You know, and sometimes you go to a, oh, I've bought my house, and the house is just a dump. You know, but you think, wow, you know, yeah, but this is my house. You know, there's I don't know if you ever saw that film, The Castle. Remember The Castle? I mean, it was this dumpy old house right at the end of a runway of an airport, and he was so attached to it, so attached to it, he couldn't give it up. This is my house. I'll fight to the death because of my house. I'm so attached. So that's sticky senses of mind. The only one good thing that that whole film had was a mantra that we can use when we come to teach somebody about spiritual life and they think that this material body, this physical body is the all in all, we simply turn around and tell him he's dreaming, because that's what they're doing. They're simply dreaming their life away. So real Krishna consciousness is in our hands, and real happiness, Krishna conscious happiness is positive truth. Real happiness is positive truth, or tattva. Tattva is the Sanskrit word for positive truth. And sometimes we come in, when we're doing our preaching and we're out there and we're saying to people, look, come to this Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is happiness at every moment. You know? And sometimes you may be a little bit euphoric in our presentation, thinking that, okay, if you come to Krishna consciousness, everything will be okay. It will be in due course of time, but it doesn't necessarily happen immediately. Sometimes we say, if we become Krishna conscious, we don't have to worry about anything anymore. You know, the material conditions will be much better. That doesn't necessarily happen straight away. We still may experience some heavy conditions. There still may be things that are coming up. But if we've aligned ourselves with Krishna, then we can't be pushed from our Krishna conscious position. We constantly come back to our understanding that Krishna is with me, Krishna is directing and helping me. If I'm making an effort in my Krishna consciousness, he will also reward me and return, help me in any situation. So it's not that everything will be completely positive and there won't be any setbacks or hardships when we come to Krishna consciousness, but we have the added advantage of understanding that it's a temporary situation and eventually we'll come to Krishna. And we can't be pushed from our Krishna conscious position. And that is this tattva, that is that positive truth. And that positive truth gives us a state of peace even within this material situation, no matter what happens. Like recently, we were just going through some different financial working outs, as every grihastha has to do. And you're sort of thinking, well, how the heck are we going to work this out? And sometimes we lose touch that Krishna is actually right there and he's helping out. And you think, boy, how are we going to get out of this situation? You know, and then all of a sudden, Krishna's made an arrangement for something. And you think, I see the working of Krishna. And if we just stay faithful and have a little bit of faith, we have to develop this understanding and attraction to Krishna, and to develop this ability to grow in our spiritual life, to develop getting closer and closer to develop our attraction for this happiness which is in the association with Krishna, the honey of his lotus feet, we have to develop a little bit of faith, Shraddha. Shraddha. Shraddha is the Sanskrit word for faith. What faith actually means is place in the heart. Place in the heart. So if in your service to Krishna, when you apply a little faith, you have to put your heart into it. You actually have to work at it. So you have to really try to understand Krishna. You really have to try and work out what is my relationship with Krishna. We have the rules and regulations within Krishna consciousness, and they're our framework. We work with them, and they help us along the way. But it's not the only thing. We also, for real spiritual growth, we also have to work internally. We have to work on our sadhana, on our understanding of Krishna, on our relationship with Krishna, feeling Krishna within our heart, understanding that he's actually there to help us in times of need, and is also there to award us unlimited happiness. So we have to have this Shraddha, this faith. And we have to work at it. Now it's easy to just follow rules and regulations. Well, it's not easy, but you can. And by following nicely, by wearing your dhoti correctly or your sari correctly and being there at Mangalarti all the time and following all the rules, that's there. And that can actually be shown that, yeah, this person is following da-da-da-da. But this internal development, this internal relationship with Krishna, is something that is not seen. Can't be seen by everybody. How you are relating to Krishna. You can't make a show of it. It's just an internal relationship you have with Krishna and Guru. So this is the more advanced stage. And in that more advanced stage, you simply want to please Krishna. It's not that when we're developing a relationship with Krishna that we have euphoric experiences, as again a lot of the different Mayavad philosophies teach, that you have these different enlightened sort of chakras opening and universes expanding or anything like that, or ecstatic symptoms and so on. That may come, but it's not of most importance. The most important ecstatic symptom that a devotee has is, how much am I pleasing Krishna? How much am I serving Krishna? Krishna says in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the person that actually teaches this Bhagavad Gita, he is the most dear to me. So what is the message that our spiritual masters and Srila Prabhupada are all advocating and saying, look, the greatest happiness comes if you simply try to preach this Krishna consciousness, teach this Krishna consciousness. What is that shloka in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Chaitanya is talking to Kurama? That shloka is Amara Amara Anya Ajana Guru. Yeah. Be a guru and save everybody in this land. That shloka, actually, that verse, Srila Prabhupada, if you check it on Vedabase, he says that in lectures and in conversations 200 times. He's encouraging the devotees to take up the responsibility of teaching. Teach everyone you come in contact with. Lord Chaitanya said that to Kurama. Teach everyone you come in contact with. And he was a grihastha. Teach everybody about this love of Krishna. Teach everybody about this attractiveness of Krishna. Get everybody out of this illusion to be attracted by the material body. Teach everybody that actually real happiness, unlimited happiness, comes from serving the Lord. Become guru and save everybody in this land. And Srila Prabhupada said, the thing that pleases me most, the happiness which I derive the most, is if my disciples take up this mission. In the purport to that verse, Prabhupada said that my spiritual master, this was his desire. This is my desire. My Guru Maharaj, that was his mission. This is now my mission. You please take this as your mission, to help and save the fallen conditioned souls. So that's our duty. And that is the symptom of happiness. How much you're preaching. Every one of us knows that the greatest joy that a person, that a devotee can have, is actually teaching people about Krishna consciousness, enlightening people about God consciousness, allowing their eyes to open up, and not to be attracted. Slowly, slowly allow that person to grow. In fact, what it is, when we take on this role as a teacher, we become like a father waiting for the little child to walk. And there may be stumbles, there may be falls, and so on and so forth, but we as teachers help them. Come on, you can do this. Oh, now you're standing. Now the next stage. So we help them mature. We help them grow. So we have to have faith and somehow or other do more and more and more and more to help spread this Krishna consciousness movement. Somehow or other. We all say, well, you know, if we asked everybody here, can you do more to help in spreading Krishna consciousness, we could all say, yes, we can. We can do a little bit more. And that's what's required. That's what Prabhupada wants. Prabhupada was never, ever elated to hear about ecstatic symptoms that a devotee may be having. Never. If you read the conversations or the dialogue between devotees and Srila Prabhupada, what made Prabhupada happy was how many temples have been opened, how many books have been distributed, how many devotees have been preached to. That made Prabhupada happy. Everything else was a secondary thing. So that's our legacy. That's the apprenticeship that we have to now also follow. Just serving Srila Prabhupada, bringing people, connecting people to Srila Prabhupada, connecting people to the parampara, to liberate them from this bodily conception and make them understand that actually Krishna consciousness and Lord Krishna is the most beautiful experience and the most pure experience and the source of unlimited happiness. And slowly, slowly we can actually do that and develop very wonderfully ourselves and help as many people as we can as well. So this is vital, it's important. And actually Prabhupada said, if you don't do that, if you don't make an effort to actually teach people, if you don't make an effort to actually present yourself as guru, teacher, that displeases me. He wanted us to actually take on this role as teacher and help people in their miserable conditional life. And there's heaps of people out there to help. There are so many people that are so illusioned by this, like the word said here, if you don't accept your husband or a lover as a living corpse covered with skin, whiskers, nails, hair, air, body hair, filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, feces, mucus, bile and air. That's it. We have a duty to actually liberate people from this conception. They are so illusioned. They think that this package of junk is actually the all in all. And we're not there to shatter their illusion, but we're there to give them a higher taste. Just like the child, when you want to take the toy away from the child and it's time that the 10-year-old kid is still playing with his little rattle, you think, oh, no, listen, Johnny, you can't play with that rattle anymore. Let me take that one here. Look, play with the train. Ooh, train! Give him a higher taste. So that's what Krishna consciousness is about. Gently, subtly, lovingly, we change a person's attraction. And that way we make progress. We do that in a loving way. Just like the parent, when you're taking the toy away from the parent doesn't go, give it! The kid goes, give me my razzle! No, you do it in a loving way. Oh, Johnny, I've got a much better present for you now. This is a train. Look at this train, Johnny. Johnny goes, yeah! There goes the rattle, So this is that's the nature and that's the technique that devotees use. They use love as their secret weapon. And Krishna again inspires you because Krishna loves you. You know how to actually apply that loving propensity. And then you are able to deal with Krishna, the people in this material world and able to help them grow. And we ourselves also have to be diligent and mark our growth. Don't be complacent. Always check your own growth. Am I making advancement? Am I really doing more? Can I do more? What else can I do? How can I preach? And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be 100% engaged in a temple thing. It can also be at your home. How many books can I distribute? How many people can I talk to? What else can I do? How else can I present Krishna consciousness? There are so many people that are suffering in this material world. There's an ocean of them. There's an open field. Sometimes You know, like in a sales conference or something, they think, okay, there's a limited market for a particular item. Well, believe me, in the material world, there's no limited market. Everybody is there as a prime candidate. You know, basically speaking, we see, okay, there may be some demoniac people that have no attraction to spiritual life whatsoever, but 99% of the people are innocent people that are willing to hear some aspect of Krishna consciousness. Like yesterday, a really interesting scenario. Bhakti was selling earrings to these girls as our income. And for years she's been dealing with these girls and, oh yes, look at that nice earring. Oh yes, buy that nice earring. You know, just an attraction thing. And recently we've made some changes in our lives and she told these girls, well look, seriously, I'm not going to be coming around anymore with the earrings. I know they're really beautiful, but I'm changing a different direction. I'm going to be doing a lot more preaching work. I said, preaching work? Yeah, yeah, I'm actually a Hare Krishna and I'm going to be, you know, teaching a lot more and so on and so forth directly to the public, and I'm not going to be doing the earrings anymore. And these girls that she'd been dealing with for years, not knowing that she was a devotee, not even connecting that there's any possibility that this person is going to enlighten me spiritually, straight away said, oh, really? This is something I've always been interested in. Can you tell me about that? And for an hour, she had a conversation and preaching and teaching these people about Krishna consciousness. So this is the opportunity that all of us have. So say, for example, if you're in a milk bar, you know, and you've had this rapport with the milk bar person for years. Hi, John. Hi, Bill. How you going? You know, make an effort to change that person's life. Make an effort to interrupt their cycle of this attraction, that attraction, this, you know, and introduce some level of spirituality. Introduce another toy for them, a spiritual toy. A toy that will be totally satisfying forever. And that's our mission. That's the legacy that Prabhupada has handed to us. And doing that brings about the greatest happiness. Every one of us knows, if we have a candidate, somebody that's really interested in Krishna consciousness, who can stop? Who can really say, okay, you know, oh yeah, oh God, what time is it? Okay. You don't want to stop. Like even the other day, Aniruddha Prabhu was gave this lecture at a Rotary Club about Krishna consciousness, and he told me that the guy actually had to tell him, now I know you can keep on talking for until the cows come home, but we're going to have to stop you right here, you know. So people are so interested, they're asking questions back and forward. So that's the nature, that's our bliss, that's our happiness, to present Krishna consciousness, to teach Krishna consciousness, to enlighten people, to enliven people, to give people the chance to experience unlimited happiness and love that the Supreme Lord offers, the nectar of the honey of his lotus feet. Who would be attracted to a mundane husband or wife or material car or extended things like a house? You see it in Krishna consciousness and then everything is perfect. Anyway, I'll stop here. Any comments or questions at all, Prabhu? Yes, Prabhu.
We engage in all this ecstatic preaching, nice temple worship and everything, yet still we're attracted to the opposite sex. So how do we...
Yeah, it's a conundrum. That's the big one. But it gets less and less, you know. There was a lecture that Lokanath Swami gave years and years ago, and he said, "I'm so happy I'm growing older." Because finally this sex desire starts to calm down. And it's true. At that stage I was still reasonably young. But as you get older actually, it just sort of goes. It's not a big deal anymore. But when you're in a young body and it's all just all fired up, that's part of the thing, you know. It's these heavy conditions are still there. But with better intelligence, we can ascertain what the situation is. Just like, you know, the devotee understands that we're not these material bodies made up of blood, pus, stool, urine, blah, blah, blah. Similarly, like I said, the devotee also sees that that whole system, that whole bodily system, is a beautifully attractive thing because the creator of that, my Lord Krishna, you know, he did that. He made this beautiful thing. So similarly, the sex attraction between the opposite sex is a beautiful thing. It's an absolutely glorious thing. used in Krishna's service, it is a wonderful thing, you know. A lot of people say that, you know, sometimes, you know, in our preaching, you know, so you don't have sex? You know, and we say, no, actually, it's not a big deal, you know. But inwardly, you know that there's still an attraction there. But in a marriage situation, when sex is done for procreating children, that is a wonderful experience. When our children were conceived, it was a wonderful spiritual experience. And Krishna sanctioned that of sex acts. I am that, Krishna says. So done under religious principles, under spiritual principles, it's a wonderful thing. But in dealing with members of the opposite sex, even while we're growing, we're still really babies. You know, all of us are still really young still in our Krishna consciousness. That growing, yeah, there may be some difficulties, but we use intelligence, we use our faith in Krishna, we develop our internal dialogue with Krishna, we develop our eternal relationship with Krishna, and we start to feel it from within, and then better intelligence overrides that material propensity, and you're able to control the situation. You know? There's that classic example, again, that is quoted time and time again, about Yudhisthira Maharaj and how he was attracted to Queen Kunti. Was it Queen Kunti? Who was Yudhisthira Maharaj's mother? Yeah, Queen Kunti. And Krishna asked Yudhisthira, you know, how come is it that you're not attracted? Aren't you? You look at Kunti had the boon of being young forever, bodily, so she never became saggy and baggy or anything. And Krishna asked, aren't you attracted? He said that to Yudhisthira Maharaj. Aren't you attracted to your mother? And Yudhisthira Maharaj, because she's so beautiful, you know. And Yudhisthira said, yep, that's it. And he said, so what do you do about it? And he said, nothing. And Prabhupada was also asked many, many times. You know, devotees would come with exactly that argument. But Prabhupada, you know, I'm so attracted to the opposite sex. And Prabhupada went like this. Grit your teeth and bear it. Just grit your teeth and bear it. And replace it with something of a higher value. You know? And he often said, okay, read more Krishna Leela. You know, read more about Krishna and the gopis. And slowly that passion, that desire will mitigate and slow down and you're able to control it. And it does. It does. It'll go away in due course of time. You just have to be patient and work at it. Work at your growth. You know? And again, it's like those sticky fingers. You know, the sticky senses. If before it gets too sticky, before you go like that, right? And then it's, oh, how do I peel this thing off? If you go, ooh, that's sticky, right? And just leave it alone, you know, okay. What, go on to something else. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You know, change that programming, instead of going, yeah, it's sticky, it is a little bit sticky, yeah, you're stuck. So you have to make that endeavor. You have to work at your growth. That's what's called working at your growth. You know? And accomplishing things, you know, in your growth. Saying, yeah, I've conquered that. It's fine. You know, when you see a member of the opposite sex, understand that personality is Krishna's creation. That personality belongs to Krishna. You know, she doesn't belong to me. It's Krishna's property. This selfish desire has got me into so much trouble and has got me into this illusory condition for so many lifetimes. With intelligence, better intelligence, analyze the situation. You know, this is Krishna's property. And how does the Shastras, how does my guru ask me to deal with that? See everyone as your mother. Accept your wife, see everyone as your mother. Yes, Mataji. How can you know? And that's the process. So it's difficult. There's no two ways about it. It's not an easy street. It's not that, yeah, we join the temple, put on a dhoti or a sari and all these things go away. No. But we have to work at them. We have to work at our growth. Is that right? Yes, Mataji.
In regards to Krishna's mercy, isn't it that we also do distinguish between sadhana siddha and kripa siddha?
Yeah.
And Prabhupada just says, you know, kripa siddha is so rare, like a student getting an honorable degree.
Yes.
You can't wait for that and think it's going to happen. That's fast. But it is also there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah, exactly. The mercy of Guru is there. But it's, generally speaking, it's sadhana kripa that is the thing that we have to work at. It's working day in, day out. Wake up in the morning, okay, here we go again. How do I get a bit of bliss in this day? And we know that our sadhana is one thing and our connection with Krishna is the other thing, and the greatest happiness comes from also presenting this, because this philosophy, this understanding, and getting that return.
Perfection just through the mercy of Krishna is also a part of our philosophy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, yeah, absolutely right. Yes, Bhakti.
Our philosophy is Chitta Veda Abhedi. So there's always, in all areas, there's this oneness, the difference.
Yeah.
So it's the understanding, but the total understanding is that both are there. It's the mercy and the effort.
Yep.
It's never one to be excluded
or the other.
The other.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely correct.
And that's there in many different areas in the world. Yes, that's true, but that's true also.
Yeah.
And those two work together.
Yeah. Yes, Prabhu.
On the same point, endeavor and mercy. Somebody falls in the well, then he has to make endeavor, and then even if he put the rope, he has to pull on the rope, and then he can come up.
That's a good analogy. Did everybody hear that? The well? Even though somebody's caught down the well, you throw the rope, he still has to climb up and hold on to the rope while he's being pulled out. Exactly right. There's endeavour.
Similarly, also another example is like child in the cradle. You are making them how to learn walking.
Yes.
So, if there's a hole in that cradle, you know, you make him sick, the child, and then he can walk. So similarly, the four principles are there to hold us in that periphery, and then the parents are trying to tell them how to walk, and then encourage them. Yes, yes, you did very well, you're doing very well, and that's how the child runs.
Yep, exactly. Very good. Thanks, Prabhu. Any other comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.